This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 334 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
So we are here with our countdown for 2024. Must remember that it is the right year. I remembered. Hooray me. We're only like, I don't know, 3 weeks into January, and it already feels like it's been an entire year. I don't know.
So just before we start, is this our anniversary?
It might be.
Isn't it always like January?
Probably. That would mean I would have to look it up, and I forgot. So,
well, happy anniversary.
Yeah. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
What we're here for, man. It's been cool. To entertain ourselves.
Hell yes. That's the only thing is entertaining ourselves. There's a lot of self-indulgence. I don't know. That's my side of things. I self-indulge a lot.
The only reason to do this at this point, nobody's getting paid. So we do it for our own amusement.
But we're open to sponsorship. If you're out there listening, someone's got to keep Marina in hibiscus flavored soju. So
that we could like reaching out like T-Fury if you want to do t-shirts, Shout Factory if you want to give us free Blu-rays.
I'm okay with all of this.
Yeah.
Criterion announced like 7 discs I wanted to buy for April. So if they want to do that too, they can.
And Nora, one of them.
Yeah. Two Sean Bakers.
Yeah. And Nora, Prince of Broadway. Yeah.
Chungking in 4K. Yeah. Oh, so good.
And I also didn't realize Takeout was on Criterion, and I like literally almost fell out of my chair. Like, gotta get that.
It came out same day as Chop Shop, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, those came out the same day. And then Substance is out this week as we record on 4K.
Nice.
Oh, man. I don't really know if I want to watch that shrimp scene again in 4K.
I'm a masochist.
I could do that. But that ending, I don't know, man. That ending landed the movie very low on my top 20, let's just say.
This could be my new American Psycho, because when I got the VHS for that one, I watched the fuck out of that one.
Oh my god, that movie! American Psycho, because I the other day I was looking for some clips, and I ended up like down this rabbit hole of YouTube movie clips, and the card scene kills me every fucking time. It's just so perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfection of that scene. That entire movie is so good.
And there is no need to do a remake of that film. It is already pretty perfect film.
Okay, but let's talk about some movies from this past year and maybe from 2023, depending on whatever. We don't have a lot of rules here. But I mean, I think this is funny because we did talk about like quote unquote air quote rules. And to me, there really aren't any.
I have a really simple rule. If I saw it in 2024, it's on my list.
That's kind of my rule.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
So what if I had never seen The Lady from Shanghai before? Movies from 1942.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Okay. I'm just checking.
There are rules. And I think I want to preface for me, this top 10 is never like, I never call it the best movies of the year, because I think I think there's a difference between, at least for me, there's a difference between a movie that is really technically well made and something that I really enjoy, and they're not always the same thing. So for me, when I do this list, I always want to preface by saying these are my favorite movies of last year, and hence why sometimes the list is a bit weird.
Yeah, I think, I don't know about you guys, but I have like 5 criteria for this listing, because I actually hate rating art. I hate rating it and ranking art. There's something that's really uncomfortable for me about doing that. So I'm going to give my top 10 right now. It might not be the same top 10 in 2 weeks from now. And even the order that it's in the top 10, I don't know if that's really true. But the only way that I could kind of get my head around doing this was to come up with like a set of criteria. So for me, it's like message, purpose. Like, what is this movie trying to say and why is it important? Innovation and technical excellence would be criteria number two. Performances. How much did I enjoy watching this movie actually factors fairly high into the list. And then also just what are some movies that I really want to raise the profile on and get people to see? Because there's some like big blockbuster films that came out that I really enjoyed watching, but they're not in my top 10 list because honestly, if you don't know about Dune 2 at this point, I don't know what to tell you. So
never heard of it.
But yeah, so that's kind of like where I landed, was with those kind of five criteria. Do you guys have a list of things that you're looking for? Is it just pure enjoyment or technical or switches back and forth?
I just like rad films.
It looks like a lot of mine turned into like genre pieces. Like I just really like singled out like singular visions within certain genres, I guess. Like now when I like look through it and stuff, I'm like, huh. Yeah, it seems to be like an easy way to hook me as a viewer. Rewatchability, like whether I'll go back and re-ingest these movies again. The bigger that rewatch factor, the higher ability to land on my list.
Yeah, and I think my list falls very much in my criteria, if I have any, kind of goes very much hand in hand with yours, Melissa. But I don't, well, as you'll be able to tell from my list, I did not put a lot of indie stuff on my list because it was not what spoke to me. That said, I think the majority of my list of stuff that I wouldn't put in my list if I couldn't watch it again. And for sure, the top three, I've seen more than once. Maybe the top five. I think one I haven't seen again, but I did, like, I usually do that, like, the movies that I feel like I kind of want to give a second look at for whatever reason. And those are usually the movies that, you know, down the road in 10 years are the ones that I'm going to revisit. So my list, I feel comfortable saying these are all movies that if I haven't already bought, I'm probably going to buy and eventually I'm going to rewatch them all. Because at this point, I've already seen them all more than.
That's so fascinating to me, like that take on rewatchability, because I tend not to rewatch a lot of stuff. Like I don't, it's not a priority for me. I don't have a big physical media collection. But I appreciate that is a huge factor for other people who watch movies. So yeah.
It feels like, for me, it always feels like a warm blanket. Like sometimes if I'm feeling down or whatever, like usually it's just like, I need a pick me up of some sort. And the movies that are like, that I watch, they're not always like happy movies, like pick me up movies, but they're movies that like, for whatever reason, they bring me some comfort. Like I watch Seven probably more regularly than is probably healthy, but there's something about watching that movie, like the nostalgia of it, the movie itself, like there's something about it that whenever I watch it, I just feel like I feel better. I don't know what it is, but it is. Pride and Prejudice, another movie I watch so many times. Twilight, same thing. Like there's just like certain movies. So I like being able to like go to the shop and go, I'm going to watch this today. If I'm feeling like kind of not great, which happens more than I want to admit, but yeah. I do like having movies that I can just go to the shelf and I don't have to go looking for where it's streaming, which is the worst nightmare. It's like, it's not streaming anywhere. It's like, it's okay. I can just pull it off my shelf.
I'm currently in the middle of a rewatch of the television show Felicity.
Nice. Is it Disney Plus?
No, I have the DVDs.
Oh, yeah, the DVDs. Nice. Yeah. Well, way to go. Physical media, Bell.
Physical media.
Yeah. Has there even been a re-release of Blu-ray? No.
No. Of course not.
No, because there's too focused on Lost. Yeah. There hasn't even been an Alias re-release on Blu-ray, has there?
No.
Unless you're Lost, you're not going to get the love.
But don't worry, you can get Friends in 4K.
I have Friends in 4K. Thanks, Warner Brothers. Thanks, guys. They sent me that in the same parcel as Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
Wow. How many discs is that? How many discs is that Friends set?
The Friends one? It's 10 seasons. Yeah. But they can fit more episodes on a Blu-ray disc than they could on the regular, because the regular box sets were 6 discs, I think.
Wow.
So
I've never even watched Friends like once. I feel no need to ever watch that show ever.
Yeah.
Well, I'm okay missing all of the cultural touchstones of that series. I just have zero interest.
Okay, I got another question. Can I ruin the show for another 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rest in peace, David Lynch.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Really?
I can't even watch his movies right now. I'm so broken up.
I'm in the middle of watching Twin Peaks again right now. So I watch a bunch of shows concurrently. But Twin Peaks is one that I'm watching through again. And I just today, well, probably an hour before we record, watched season 2, episode 1 on my complete Z to A box set. And he directed that episode.
It's the only episode of that season he directs, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's such a crazy episode too, because you're coming out of Coop being shot and it gets super metaphysical. Leland debuts his white hair for the first time. Like there's a lot of shit going on in that one. And Laura Flynn Boyle is like absolutely seductress in that one. It's like a total shift of the Donna character. And it's all because of these sunglasses that her and Cheryl Lee wear. And it's such a Lynchian thing too, that the sunglasses make them feel like this and everything. He was just brilliant. He was just there will never be anybody that'll make us feel about film the way he did and the way his films do.
I weirdly went home and watched The Fablemans.
Oh, nice. For that's the final on screen.
And it's cool. Like, I remember when I saw it in the theater, I was so shocked that David Lynch was John Ford. It was so great. And the movie's still pretty fun and he's incredible in it. So yeah, rest in peace, David Lynch.
I think it's really wonderful that Criterion has put The Art Life out for free right now. So you can go and watch it, even if you don't have access to the Criterion channel. You can watch it online, and it's such a brilliant look at his creative ethos and his approach to art. And also his hair is absolutely fucking magnificent in that movie.
His hair is always magnificent. It was always on point.
Yeah. Best in the biz.
Always.
I really loved his COVID weather reports where he would tell us the weather. Then he would start like talking about his wood projects he's making and stuff like that. It was so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
A singular voice for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who wants to go first?
Listen, I'll get this show on the road.
Okay.
So the way this is going to go down is going to count down from 10 to 1. We'll go around and then we'll do an honorable mentions at the end. My number 10.
So just before we go. So if a movie is mentioned, are we going to talk about it then? And then I'll then say... Yeah. Or do we all want to talk about it?
If it's separately? On the numbered list, I wouldn't give it away then.
Okay.
Yeah, I could go with that.
All right.
But if it's an honorable mention, then yeah.
For sure.
I'm sorry.
My number 10 is Memoir of a Snail. I shifted my entire list 20 minutes before the show to include Adam Elliott's movie. Because I was looking at the list again. I'm like, how is this not higher on my list? Because I legitimately cried.
Wasn't that your mid-year number one?
It might have been. I did some reorganizing. But yeah, I think this movie is super touching. It's so beautiful. It's a wonderful tale about outsiders and finding your own family, like found family, and how important having people that understand you around you is. And those are not necessarily the people that you might expect. I just think it's such a touching film, and it's just lovely. It's so, so fun to watch in this kind of like, my high school gothy self would have like loved this movie to bits. It's so beautiful. So Memoirs of a Snail is my number 10.
Also like 9 years in the making.
No kidding, right?
And I like it better than Mary and Max. I like Mary and Max a lot, but I think that this is like...
I think this is a better film.
Yeah. It's not in any of my honorable mentions at all, but this is a great film. A really, really great film. A very touching film too.
Okay, Steve, since you talked last, what is your number 10?
My number 10 is Strange Darling. This film is beautiful to look at. It knocks you on your ass with two great performances from Willa Fitzgerald and Kyle Gallner. Kyle Gallner, who I feel has like been underappreciated for a very long time, except for genre pieces. The neon in this film, the reds in this film, Giovanni Ribisi just fucking hitting a home run with this movie. Like I've done a top 10 on my own show, my own show. And it's, I talked about this film, but it wasn't on my top 10 then. Cause like I said, it's in a number of evolving things. So this is a new path for this top 10. And I had to bring Strange Darling cause it's just such a great film and an absolute surprise that came out of nowhere. And you could buy it at Walmart for $10. So come on.
I have the German 4K.
Ooh, see, that's nice. That's really yeah. How much did that end up?
It was not you? Cheap. I think it cost me like $60, but I didn't really care. I was like, it's Christmas. Yeah. I'm buying it.
This sounds like my German version of Possessor, which is also on 4K, which also cost me like an arm and a bloody leg, but I'm so proud I own.
That only got a Blu-ray release, right? A Blu-ray and DVD or a Blu-ray and digital copy release. It was like an Elevation release, I think, in Canada. Yeah, that's what I got then.
Melissa, what is your number 10?
So my number 10, I actually picked Baby Girl as my number 10. Just because I honestly just think of all the movies I watched this year, this is the one that has like, this is one of the ones that has kind of lingered in my brain and that I've come back to thinking about multiple times. And I think it's just because of, it might be one of the first times that we've really seen an honest and sort of uncomfortable and awkward portrayal of kink dynamics on screen. I think Kidman and Harris Dickinson are both really phenomenal in the movie. I just think this was something that I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting what I got. And because I wasn't expecting what I got, it's made me think about it multiple times since seeing it, which is, so that's why it's ended up on my top 10 list.
Awesome. Mr. Bill, you're number 10.
I usually like to put a film I like to champion at number 10. I have weird rules. My number 20 is weird too. Don't even get me started. Ghostlight, a movie that nobody has seen and probably should be on everybody's top 10. Let's be honest. A film that handles grief like individually and, you know, with family. And, you know, some people do it differently. Sometimes they just do Shakespeare, you know, like it's just incredibly natural and really kicked my ass. It's quite the kick to the teeth, but it's also really like, it's like a redemption angle in that film. And I really quite liked the acting is incredible. I can't pronounce the guy's last name, so I'm not going to say it. It's maybe the most underrated film of the year. And I think everybody should see it. It's on VOD, so get on it now.
I do like a yearly thing for the Shane Hewitt show. It was our fourth annual year. We call it the Stebbies. And it's like Oscars or whatever. Like I do best actor and all that kind of stuff. And the winner for best actor this year was, I gave it to Keith Kupfer from this movie because it's just incredible. Dolly De Leon in this film too is so fucking great. And it's also not only Keith Kupfer, but the daughter in this is his real daughter and the wife in this is his real wife as well. And they're like theater people. They're a theater family. So doing this film wasn't a huge jump for them. And it's the same filmmakers that did St. Francis, which is a movie I really, really liked. I forget what his name is, but it's Kelly
O'Sullivan and
Kelly O'Sullivan
and Alex Thompson did that.
Yeah. Great stuff. Yeah. I loved Ghostlight and it's a movie I pushed onto a lot of people. I don't know if they took my recommendation, but I was like, find this movie and watch it.
It only goes downhill from here. So that's a nice one.
I thought you had no rules. I thought it was just rad movies, Bill.
It's a rad movie.
Yeah, rad. Ghostlight's rad.
I also want to apologize to all my peeps. I don't think there's any Canadian films from the King of Canadian films.
So I
apologize.
Chloe outdid you with that one. Her number one film is a Canadian film, and it's a BC film is number one. Like, holy shit. She's representing. Representing.
Steve, your daughter took Viv a little too seriously. Okay, like, we have to calm her down.
She's a rookie. All right, we'll see how it works out this year.
Oh my god,
don't listen to him, Chloe. You're doing great.
I agree 110%.
Don't worry, I'm full of shit. I'm full of shit.
So number nine is a movie that literally kicked my teeth in, or not mine necessarily, but somebody's. Monkey Man. I looked at my list of movies and I'm like, man, this movie kicked so much ass in so many unexpected ways. It's raw, it's exciting. That the Dell took however many years to make this thing on freaking iPhones. It's just a piece of marvel that this movie exists, and it's so bloody good and has a message on top of everything else. So yes, Monkey Man, if you haven't seen it, please do yourself a favor. It is so good. Steve, you're number nine.
My number nine film of 2024 is Dev Patel's Monkey Man. This movie, I mean, everything Marina said, this movie is incredible. And just the sweat, blood, broken bones, scarring, industry scarring that Dev Patel went through. And oh my god, the reds in that third act are just playing to me. And the culture and the queerness of it too. There's just so much going on in this film that I really, really, really loved. And Dev Patel rocks. I want him to make so many films like this. I would watch them all. They're so good.
I still kind of want him to be Bond, but hey.
Yeah, well, I'd be okay with that. I feel like Barbara Broccoli's thrown her arms up the whole thing, especially with the way that Prime is treating it as an IP and not giving it the respect. But these are all people that didn't, you know, Bond isn't as holy and sacred to these people, clearly. So, but yeah, Deb Patel would be great.
Nor should he be, to be totally honest, but...
Melissa, you're number nine.
My number nine is queer, actually. I'm not the world's biggest fan of biopics, and I think this is quite an interesting intro to. I guess it's based on a novel that is based on the author's life, but isn't technically a biography. So maybe that's the cheat. Maybe that's why this works for me in a way that biopics don't normally. But I just think Daniel Craig is absolutely incredible in this movie. He is completely lost in the character that is so based in William Burroughs. And I think this is a movie that Burroughs himself would have fucking loved so much. Mm-hmm. I just think it's such a brilliant tribute to him as an author and a creator. And it's batshit crazy. There's magical realism. And a really, really brilliant performance at the heart of it. So I just think this one is a bit kooky, but it was right in my wheelhouse. And I really just appreciated this for being such an incredible tribute and incredible portrayal of William Burroughs.
Yeah, this one was in my honorable mentions. And it's a more Luca film than Challengers was, to be honest. And the stuff in the jungle, especially the tripping out and the melding of skins.
There was a lot of craziness in that sequence.
Incredible. Oh yeah. And how then the nightmare, right? But like when the trip was good, it was like really, really, really trippy. Of course, you guys brought up Leslie Manville, and this was before I'd even seen the film. And yeah, your guy, it picks up to a crazy degree when she enters the film. You see a lot of Drew Starkey in this film, mm-hmm. Which has now made its way onto the internet. that scene is being shared quite a bit now. And yeah, Daniel Craig is just absolutely perfect in this film. He's so damn good in this movie.
I do also, I think like the way that this film taps into that feeling when the way that you feel about someone isn't equal to how they feel about you, it just taps into that feeling so well. It makes this so relatable. And that the sequence in the movie theater where there's like kind of like a ghostly version of Daniel Craig reaching out to Starkey and like wanting to touch him or put his arm around it, like that scene is so beautiful. The way that it's shot is so beautiful, and how it evokes that feeling that we've all had at some point. I just think it's just operating on such a beautiful level.
Another great score from Reznor and Ross too on that one. And I felt a kind of weirdness when they use Come As You Are.
Not the only Nirvana song in there. There's another song in there too.
Yeah, but like when they first like when that one hits you, it's like, because it's being used in like a nostalgic way, and it's just like, whoa. Like for me, it's just like, you know that Matt Damon aging gif thing. That's the exact feeling. Great film though.
Bill, you're number 9.
Probably going to be the first person to talk about this one. Who knows? Maybe the only one. But I'm pretty sure Steve's got it. Number 9 is The Substance. Coralie Farget, After Revenge, which was just a stupidly violently cool film, which I really loved, makes it an even more weird and disturbing film that Universal paid for and then sold it. Okay, that's cool. And then it made a bunch of money and they look like idiots. Hopefully this is the start of insane movies coming to like major theaters, because I'm super into that. And the more violent and weird, the better.
You're here.
I agree. And I have to say, I'm super impressed by the way movie has like handled the promotion for this thing, because like this is a movie that maybe shouldn't have had the wide audience that it did. I think the fact that it's like colorful and bright, and it stars, I've forgotten her name.
Demi Moore?
Yeah. Like this hugely recognizable star, I think would have always attracted an audience. But I mean, there was also a lot of buzz about how violent this movie was and just how crazy it was. And the number of people that asked me where to watch this, like I lost count. It literally is the movie that most people asked me about this past year. Everybody's like, where can I watch this thing? It looks amazing. My sister, who doesn't watch anything, is like, where can I watch this movie? So a lot of people signed up for free movie accounts because Marina sent them their way. Let's see if some of them forget to cancel their subscription.
It's on Netflix and it starts Megan Fox.
Oh, come on now, poor buddy. Sean, you poor soul. The fact that you actually troopered through that entire movie thinking that I recommended it.
But I like The Substance a lot. It did make my honorable mention list. And it's not higher just because it was a really good year for movies, and that ending, the last act, really kind of drove me nuts.
Just spray everywhere.
Yeah,
I really hope this is the start of like another European wave of like sick, disgusting horror like there was in the 90s. Like I'm down with that. Like give me more movies like this, and like, you know, High Tension, Martyrs,
no Inside, kidding,
all those kinds of movies that were just completely badass and like destroyed people. Bring it. Like,
well, especially because like America, if the trend is being set into 2025, American horror is boring and sanitary and not willing to give anything.
Yikes. I will also just plug, I want to plug one last thing for The Substance. There's a like almost 30 minute making of on YouTube.
That's awesome.
Together, which is fucking awesome.
It's so good.
Highly, highly, highly recommended. Highly recommended.
I'll talk about it later.
Oh,
I had a feeling.
Yeah.
My number 8, I have a feeling this might come up higher on a few of yours lists, but my number 8 is Nickel Boys. I cannot stop thinking about this movie. And I watching Amal Ross on the Roundtable Directors Talk is so fascinating. he clearly is a guy who loves movies and understands filmmaking, but he seems to be coming at it from a completely different angle than everybody else. And I think it shows in the movies that he's made. And just the perspective, the approach of perspective in this movie is so unique. It feels, I know it's not new, but it feels so jarring and new, and the way that it's incorporated into the storytelling and the story that he's telling. It's a gut punch. I loved it. I think it's brilliant. And I think it's a movie we're going to be talking about for a long, long
time. I think he's the director of the year, to be honest. Like, this movie is so impressive.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about, you know, pushing boundaries and doing things in interesting new ways, I think he's definitely in the conversation for sure.
Because it's crazy how engaging that style is.
But I think, you know, it could be seen as a gimmick, right? I mean, it could have very easily been a gimmick, which is usually how this style of shooting is used. It's usually a gimmick. It's not really used as a medium for the storytelling, which I think is what makes it so interesting here, is that it really is used to put you in the story and to make you feel at least a something of what these characters are feeling. Because the reality is, like, I'm never going to have that experience, but like getting a glimpse of it from that perspective is really like, it's jarring. Like, it makes you feel really uncomfortable. And I think that that's part of why it works so well. Like, it really puts you in the middle of the story and makes you feel some of those emotions. And I think that it's so unique. Now talking about it, I think maybe it should have been higher on my list, but it's fantastic.
It's not on my top 10 or in my honorable. So, but yeah. Yeah.
It's much higher on my list.
Much higher on my list too. So I was talking to a friend of mine and I compared the perspective change in Nickel Boys to when Dolan opened the screen up in Mommy.
Yeah.
And I think it's that revelatory. Like, he's just working on a different level. This movie is way higher on my list. Sorry, but it just is.
No, it's valid. Yeah. Steve, what's your number 8?
My number 8 is Osgood Perkins' Long Legs. I am a sucker for Nick Cage. Nick Cage is completely fucking unhinged for this movie. Also, Micah Monroe is damn great. I just love how sadistic this movie is at its core. And it's gorgeous to look at. It gave me a literal fright jump in the beginning of the film with that title card. There's just a lot that's memorable about this film for me. And I absolutely love it. It's just absolutely my type of film to its core.
It's your jam.
Yeah, this is so my jam. And again, like I was saying, like when I kind of formulate what makes my top 10, this is totally a genre film. And I'm a sucker for these films. Absolutely.
I love that Long Legs sort of got people prepared for the substance. Mm-hmm. Weirdness. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the year. And then the main course came out in September.
Which makes me so excited, especially with that new trailer that I saw before Wolfman. The new trailer for The Monkey is sadistic. I'm so into this film. I'm so psyched for it. There's so many things in it that already I've never seen anything like that before. I haven't seen anything like that before. Like, bring it. I'm so excited. It's in February. So like, yeah, let's just bring it on.
Killer Monkey. I love it.
That's so good. So good.
Melissa, what's your number 8?
My number 8 is The Substance, which we've already touched on. I think although the message here around like the pressures of aging and physical perfection for women really bludgeons you to death with that one, both figuratively and literally. But it's still a really great watch. I thought this was super fun. Like, I loved all the performances in it. Dennis Quaid was the revelation for me. Like, I knew Demi was going to be good. I was kind of shocked at how incredible Dennis Quaid was in this movie. He's just so much fun to hate in this film. And also, like, thank you for bringing back practical effects.
Hell like, yes.
That's all I want in horror. I just want real fake blood and real fake gore and prosthetics up the wazoo. Like, give it to me all. Like, give it all to me. And that is what they did with this movie. Thank you very much. Definitely in the top 10.
Here, here. I have nothing else to add.
I'll add more later.
Bill, what's your number 8?
I'm really on this one too. Anora is my number 8. Really clicked on the second viewing. Not that the first viewing was bad. It's just I thought it played a lot better on the second viewing. I also wasn't in the middle of the film festival and super tired. Big thing. It's just an emotional roller coaster, and but also hilarious and like really sad at the end. And the performances are really incredible. And I hope that Mikey Madison actually gets rewarded for this. Like, cause everybody was like Simon Rex, Simon Rex, Simon Rex, and then he got nothing. And I really hope that this great performance is actually gets something. And I'm really happy for Sean Baker. I think it's great that he's kind of graduated into more than just like that indie guy. He's now a big time director. And I think that's awesome because I've talked to Sean Baker in real life and he's a really cool guy. And I'm quite happy for this. And I cannot wait to buy the Criterion 4K. Yeah. Number 8, Anora.
Oh, I love that movie. My number 7 is The Wild Robot, another movie that made me cry like a baby. Mm-hmm. I cried so hard at this movie. It probably should be higher. Thinking about it, just, Chris Saunders is like this unassuming character that makes movies that are always a gut punch. And this one is beautiful to look at. It's a lovely story about family and nature and resiliency. And it's so pretty. And it made me fall like a baby. Oh, it's so sad. And so it's lovely. I just love this movie so much.
Not in my list, but good movie.
This is in my honorable mentions. It's a beauty of a film, and it had my heart the whole time, especially the greatest way to have talking animals. Perfection, like no notes.
I'm still trying to figure out why my nieces are so inhuman that they didn't have an emotional reaction to this movie. And I'm like, I wonder if that'll change in like 15 years when they're older and they have like more of emotional maturity, if they'll actually like get it. I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that they do, because otherwise we're raising a bunch of monsters. Is all. I love them dearly, but I'm very worried.
Just wanted to point out that Wild Robot is in my top 34. Just wanted to point that out.
Okay. Yeah. It's in there. That's good.
Top 34. That's very specific.
It's my shortlist number.
That's nice. I like it.
Steve, what's your number 7?
My number 7 is a newbie, and maybe it's just because it's so new and why it has such a rub on me. But A Complete Unknown really got me.
Oh, that a boy.
This movie really got me. It's a movie that I felt loves music and loves the songwriting, and has an appreciation for it. Timothy Chalamet is the nucleus of this film that really holds it together. I thought that he was so damn good and wasn't just playing Dylan for a caricature, but was playing it to play a dude, you know, play to play a guy that's vulnerable, makes shitty decisions, treats people like shit, but also is like this undeniable talent that people are in awe of. And I've never seen a better on-screen Johnny Cash than Boyd Holbrook. The scene where he's drunk and trying to move his car, there is some shots in it I was like, that's fucking Johnny Cash. Like,
right? Mangold needs to remake Walk the Line.
I am with you 150%.
I also think that Complete Unknown is so much better than Walk the Line as well.
I did too, actually.
And Monica Barbaro is really, really great as well. I love a good Elle Fanning performance, and Edward Norton, that Pete Seeger wanting to be like his folk father and like is just like kind of all blowing up in his face and shit. It's just like so interesting to see. That whole dynamic I thought was fascinating, and just everything that's going in and like that microcosm of time. Really, really well done. So I really dug it.
The PBS like show that Pete Seeger has with that soul singer is like quite possibly one of my favorite scenes of the year.
It's so good. It's so, especially the way that Dylan enters with Bobby and everything. I was like,
doesn't want to take his guitar, and he's like, I won't squeeze it too hard.
Yeah,
so good. Yeah,
brilliant stuff.
Yeah, higher on my list. Not to spoil anything, but higher on my list.
Melissa, you're number 7.
Okay, my number 7. This is honestly, it's here for pure enjoyment of the watch and for emotional impact of the watch. But My Old Ass.
Oh, yes.
Worst title for one of the best movies of the year. this movie just kind of killed me. Like, I think it's one of the better coming of age movies. And I think maybe coming of age is like the wrong moniker for it, because so much of this is about what we can learn from the younger versions of ourselves too. I just found it really poignant, really touching, really funny. I think Maisie Stella is incredible in this movie. Aubrey Plaza is always good, but like Maisie Stella was like a revelation in this movie. I really want to see what Megan Park does from here, because I think this was such a home run. Like it was just really great filmmaking, really emotionally impactful story, and just intensely watchable. And you leave it feeling good and thinking about it afterwards. And yeah, it was just a really nice, it was a really great watch.
Yeah, I think the script for this movie is so smart. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
This was my first year for voting for the critic circle, and I voted the shit out of this movie for the Canadian side. Maisie Stella and Megan Park, big time, big time. And Aubrey Plaza for supporting.
I remember being at VIFF, and I went and saw this movie during VIFF. I snuck into it, and I said I was going to see a VIFF movie because I didn't have a VIFF movie to go and see. And then I told all my VIFF friends, oh yeah, I saw this movie called My Old Ass. And they all just kind of looked at me like I was.
Yeah, because the title is fucking horrible.
I know, but I was just like, you guys will figure it out. Don't worry. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys will figure it out.
Figure it out. Yeah. I have nothing more to say.
That's right.
Well, My Old Ass, I have nothing to say.
Bill, you're number 7.
My number 7 is Furiosa. We did this film wrong, friends. This should have been a top 5 earner of the year, and instead we're never going to get another one of these again because we fucked it. And I think it's better than Fury Road. I know that's like controversial and stuff, but everybody wanted Fury Road 2 and they didn't get it, so they got hurt by it. I don't know. The movie's incredible. I really wanted to shout out Chris Hemsworth for just being a complete badass in this film, just taking the piss on everything, and I quite really enjoyed it. But yeah, I hope George Miller somehow finds a way to keep on doing this, because these movies should not be as good as they are. This was like a huge difference in time, and sequels are never better, and these movies are awesome. So yeah, I'm sure everybody's seen Furiosa, but if you haven't, check it out. It's incredible.
I'll talk about it later.
Nice.
Now I feel like maybe I need to go back and rewatch it, to be honest.
It's great.
I saw it theatrically, but I haven't seen it since.
And I got the 4K on Boxing Day from Amazon for $15. So that was pretty cool.
Not a bad score. Not a bad score. My number 6 is Flow. Because again, I cried so hard watching this movie. Like, has there ever, I struggled to find a movie without dialogue that is this purposeful in its storytelling. Like listening to Gens talk about watching movies to learn about camera and where to put the camera and the tests that they did to make sure that the story had like a point of view and was saying something just through the camera movements, because they were so limited in what they could do with the rigs for the animation. It shows, like, at no point in time are you confused or lost in the story. And there actually is a really powerful story here. It's just stunning. I still kicking myself that I didn't see this on the big screen. I hope it wins all the awards. I love this movie to bits. Flo is just amazing.
Capybara for president.
It's so cool about that because Away was really cool.
Yes.
This is like next level compared to that though. Like it's a big jump. Like what's the next film going to be like?
Well, that too, right?
Yeah. Like it's higher on my list.
Yeah. Honorable mention.
Sorry. Wow.
Yeah, honorable mention for me too.
Wow.
It was a good year, man. I can't like diss anybody for anything.
Oh, shit, man. Yeah.
It's
good.
Shit, and it always changes. It always shifts around and changes.
Yeah. Once again, I'm bringing that definitive shit, man. Like I just can't stop. Just can't stop.
Steve, what's your number six?
My number six is Luca Guadagnino's Challengers. The three-way of the sexiest three-way of the year. With people that I don't find attractive in that sense, but it's just the energy that they're all giving off is just so well done. Like this is probably one of my favorite scripts of the year. Which funny enough, I got the script for it. I got that mail out book of this and Nickel Boys. So I was like, damn, that's pretty cool. And it was like this film where I really feel that Zendaya is a star. Like I hadn't really felt that before, even through Dune and everything. I didn't really feel that, but this film is Tashi is just,
Tashi energy all the way, man.
Wow. Wow. Mike Faist is fantastic in this movie. Josh O'Connor is really great. Such a punchable face too in this film.
He's just got that shit eating grin.
He does. He really does. And he nails it. He nails it every time. I really, really like him. I think he's a strong actor. The soundtrack pulses. And that's a big winner for me. If you have like an incredible score, you really win me. And this movie has the best score of the year. And it just plays really, really great in theaters too. It was a really enjoyable watch. And, I mean that windstorm scene too, fantastic. There's just a lot of great stuff in this film.
The ball cam. I love the ball cam. It's just,
yeah. Ridiculous. Oh, and that finale. Ooh, that finale is just, yeah, you know, it's just on fire. It really is on fire. So, yeah. Love Challengers. My number six of the year.
Yeah, that one was an honorable mention for me.
I can't speak to it. You're number six, Melissa.
Okay, my number six was the best Joker movie that people got to see this year. The People's Joker. So I really loved, I was entertained through this whole movie. I love the like DIY character of this film. I love the queering of a major pop culture icon. And I loved the really deeply personal, vulnerable storytelling here. But I really also think it's super important that this is a story about a trans woman claiming and coming into her power, which, you know, really turns, there's a lot of tragic stories about trans women. And I love that this one is about a woman coming into her power. And I think just in terms of the political environment that we're in right now, this is such an important movie. And so you're making an important movie with an important message with a whole lot of chutzpah and a huge sense of humor. And I just think it's brilliant. And I can't wait to see what Vera Drew does next.
I've finally added it to my watch list.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either.
Bill, you're number six.
My number six is Strange Darling. JT Mulner has the best trailer of the year because it's such a bait and switch, and you had no idea what was going on when you first watched the film. And it's incredibly inventive. It's got this what the hell is going on with me. With the movie is just like all over the place. It's different chapters. It's all out of order. It's just like, holy crap. It's got the most criminally underrated performance of the year from Willa Fitzgerald. And also, Kyle Gallner had a pretty damn good year. He was in Smile 2 for about 5 minutes and almost stole the movie. It's a big step up for Mulner. Like, I want to know what he's going to do next. And hey, as Steve said, Giovanni Ribisi, good job for you, sir. He seems like a real film nerd. I kind of dig that. This was a complete shock. Nobody had this film clocked at the beginning of the year. Except for a buddy of mine who saw it at Fantastic Fest last year and told me to look out for it. So good on you, sir. Yeah, it's great. If you haven't seen Strange Darling, check it out.
This narrowly missed my top 10, and part of me is kicking myself for not putting it there because it was one of my most enjoyable experiences in the theater all year. It was just so great watching this with an audience, and it was so great watching it in like the first week of release when nobody knew anything about it. So it was a complete shock. Like the way that the film is structured was a shock. What happens in the movie was a shock. And I felt like my heart was racing for almost the entire movie. Like, I know that there's always those taglines in movies that say, like, you'll sit on the edge of your seat. This one, I literally felt like I was sitting on the edge of my seat. And that just happens so rarely. Like, I feel like as people who watch a lot of movies, we can get quite jaded about seeing a lot of movies. So when something comes along that, like, shocks you and surprises you and, you know, pushes you into a state of almost heart attack, it's a remarkable thing. So I'm glad that you guys have it on your list.
I will say, just like totally offhand, I saw a very young heart. I think this girl, like 23, who I follow on BookTok, has started posting movie reviews, and her review of, I think it was Nosferatu, she's like, as somebody who's jaded and has watched over 200 horror movies, I'm like, oh child.
Over 200.
Please come at me. Let me teach you over about 200. What jaded and 200 movies? Fuck off.
Well, child, let me tell you about Dario Argento.
No shit. It bothers me so much. So just an offhand on the fact that we have watched a lot of films collectively, and we can legitimately say that this is something that will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I love that. For Marina, 200 movies is like a month and a half.
like the fact that like she's watched over 200 horror movies and can legitimately say this movie surprised. I'm like, dude, please go and watch some stuff. Come back to us in like 10 years once you've watched like thousands of movies and then tell us that that movie was good for that reason.
Like, exactly. Like, hold the fuck up before you call yourself scholarly.
Oh man.
Like a little bit of self-check here.
But I think Melissa is like nailed it. I think the thing that really got me about that movie is the fact that it did manage to surprise. And when we've all watched as many movies as we have, a movie that manages to surprise, it's kind of a big deal. I've lost count.
Number five.
Okay, so this is where my list, I think, will get predictable for anybody that has listened to this show at any point throughout the year. My number five is Conclave. And the rest of my list is pretty much was cemented in my mind from pretty much the moment I've watched all these movies. I'm surprised this one is not a little bit higher, but there's just... One, I love the messaging here. Two, I love the way it's made. It's such a it looks like such a simple movie, but it's so technically well done and just everything is so perfectly calibrated. I love a movie that I love a movie that knows a filmmaker that knows what they're doing and they're not afraid to show it. Like, and sometimes that doesn't always translate into something that's also fun to watch, but there's just something like endlessly watchable about Ralph Fiennes fighting himself as like the guy that's supposed to be like guiding the ship, and he is flailing at every single step. Like, he never once really knows what he's doing, which I think is kind of amazing, and I could so relate to that. Like, on the outside, like looking like you have everything together and you know exactly what's going on, and then second guessing yourself at every step, like, fuck, I really don't know what I'm doing. And then having to find ways to get answers in a way that doesn't expose you. I don't know. I got that on the second watch of the film, and I was like, you know, this really speaks to me in a really deep way. I love it. I love the precision of it. The music is great. The performances are fantastic. I love the way that I just love the way it looks. And it's a movie that I'm not afraid to like recommend to people. Like, there's nothing, like, even the religion in it didn't really, it's not like, I don't know what the, it, like, it doesn't, I'm trying to think of the word, and I've now had too much drink and I can't come up with it, but it's a movie that doesn't offend. I find that it's not offensive.
I've heard a lot about the ending. People have told me, oh, the ending is interesting. And I'm like,
I love it. It's such a fuck you to the Catholic Church.
I know. I love it.
True. That was Dan's, like, Dan's, like, the ending. He's like, I don't think I get the ending. I'm like, you didn't watch close.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love this movie. Yeah. Hence, it's my number five.
It ticks along like a well-oiled machine. Like, it really does. And yeah, it's really great. It's a great film for sure.
Steve, what's your number five?
My number five is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. This movie is exhilarating to watch, like, such an experience in theaters. Anya Taylor-Joy is fantastic, as expected. Chris Hemsworth is, I thought, was making a serious campaign for supporting actor as a villain that's built up way too much hype for himself and can't live up to it. He's really shitty at fully buying into his own bullshit. And I think it's so great. Tom Burke, I thought, was really great too, for his quick piece in the film, as well as Alia Brown, that played the younger version of Furiosa. Miller made us something really golden, and everyone just fucking threw shit in his face. So I'm with Bill. This makes me sad, but I have to celebrate it as, like, a great cinematic moment in 2024. And, you know, I don't give a fuck that he had to use more CG elements in this. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you do what you have to do to tell the stories you want to tell. And sometimes that means, you know, using green screen and CG. I don't think the movie is any worse for it. Melissa, you're number five.
Okay, my number five. This is a tough one because I don't actually know how people can see this movie. It was a film that I got to see at VIFF. And I think when I looked it up online, it looks like it's streaming on Max in the US, which maybe means you can get it through Crave here. But I don't know because I don't have Crave. Anyway, the movie that I'm actually talking about is Secret Mall Apartment. This is a documentary about Michael Townsend and a group of artists in Rhode Island who quite brilliantly took over space in a giant mall that displaced thousands of people and created a weird little apartment in it as a sort of an art project, performance art piece, act of protest, etc. And I just, this movie, I feel like, came to me at a point where I was feeling really hopeless with the state of the world. And to me, this film is like a blueprint for hope and resistance and joy in resistance. And so to me, that's like one of the most important films you can put out at this point in our human history. This movie celebrates the power of art in human connection. It celebrates the power of art in terms of political protest and resistance. And again, like, it's just such an exploration of joy in that process. And so what can often feel like a huge uphill battle, taking on these right-wing forces, taking on gentrification and displacement and impoverishment of communities, can feel really hopeless. And this movie feels like a light in the darkness to me. So I think this is the movie that's the energy that we need right now. And I really hope that people have an opportunity to see it because it's really, really brilliant. And you'll feel so much better if you watch it.
I did feel like his relationship was doomed because she didn't really understand his passion in a lot of degrees. And I'm like, that's going to only last for so long.
But also, you're seeing a documentary of them talking about something in the past when they've already broken up, right? Like, this is exes. Like, it's a different.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I had a cool conversation with a director on Twitter during VIFF about how the tape art made me cry. His art is incredible. Yeah, it's not just the tape art. It's that under that sewer, like, thing with the dolls. Oh my God, that's incredible.
Everything he's done is just such a celebration of the human spirit, and it's designed to make people feel better. That's like, that seems to be at the crux of all of the art that he makes. And I just think that's really beautiful. The artist's name is Michael Townsend. He does have an Instagram account. because I stalked him and found him and now follow him. Because I want more of that energy in my life. So, yeah.
Bill, you're number five.
My number five is a biopic, which kind of makes me want to throw up in my mouth.
What?
I know, I'm weird. Number five is A Complete Unknown. James Mangold, maybe one of the big surprises of the year for me. God, I hate biopics, but I love this. It's as I said before, I don't think it's really about Bob Dylan. I think it's about the scene and how it all gets changed from people seeing Bob Dylan and how he, you know, goes from acoustic to electric and everybody's kind of either with him or against him. And people are having real problems with it at times. And I love it. And I really love Edward Norton as Pete Seeger. I think it's so understated and great. And I think Monica Barbaro should be nominated for an Academy Award, but probably won't even get a sniff of it, unfortunately. I think she might even sound a little better than Joan Baez. I like Joan Baez, but her voice in this movie is so like just sweet and nice. I just love it. The soundtrack's incredible. Mangold is really good. He probably doesn't quite get the credit he deserves other than that Indiana Jones movie, which I don't think is very good, but he can't win them all. I think he's a really good filmmaker, and I'm glad this kind of became a hit. And I'm really interested to see Timmy next week on SNL doing the host and the musical guest. So that's going to be quite good. So yeah, number five, Complete Unknown.
Okay. Marking that on the PVR. My number four is Anora. I had the chance to show this to Dan. I'm still not quite sure how he feels about it.
Poor Dan.
I know. He's such a, oh, what a character. I'm like, hon, I have to rewatch this. He's like, what are you making me watch? Because it's usually something weird. And as soon as this started, he's like, what is this thing? I'm like, well, no wonder, right? It's kinetic. It's funny. It's sad. It's emotionally charged. It's Sean Baker at the peak of Sean Bakerness. I think that even if Mickey Madison doesn't get an Oscar nomination, the fact that she has been included in a lot of the conversations with this year's sort of buzzy actresses is certainly great for her career. And I think her star is only rising. It's just such a lovely, lovely movie and so entertaining. Like, even on the second watch, you don't feel how long it is. It moves really, really fast, really engaging. There's not much more you can want from a movie. Like, as long as it's entertaining and it has some sort of like character that you can like an emotion that you can tap into. And I think Anora certainly has that. So, Steve, you're number four.
My number four is the comedy of the year, in my opinion. It is Saturday Night from Jason Reitman. I had so much fun from beginning to end. This movie is just like one thing after another, and it's encompassing something that as a fan is really important to me, especially with how much the beginning of this long-running series started. And I think the cast is incredibly well put together, just like so pitch perfect, and they all nail it. And I also think the flow of this movie is incredible as well. I love Saturday Night. It's everything I wanted it to be, really.
It's lower on my list, but I really loved it.
Melissa, you're number four.
Okay, my number four is Mike Leigh's Hard Truths.
Oh, I just watched this last night.
I just honestly, I could watch the dynamic between Marianne Jean-Baptiste and Michelle Austin forever. Those two women are absolutely fucking brilliant in this movie. I went to this with a friend and we've both been talking about it and thinking about it ever since seeing it. And I think what it is that everybody has either experienced or had a strong relationship with someone who's experienced this kind of level of depression where you cannot see a single good thing in the world. Like, you just hate your life so much that you can't see a single silver lining in anything. And if you've never experienced that, you're lucky. But I guarantee you know someone who has, or have been around someone who has, probably not to this extent. Like, usually it's moments, not someone's entire existence that's like this. But there's a relatability here, I think, that makes, like, I just think what Marianne Jean-Baptiste is doing with this role is so ingenious, because this is such an unlikable woman. And somehow through her relationship with her sister, you find so much sympathy for her. I just thought this was really moving and really interesting. And I'm so fascinated about how Mike Leigh could make a movie like this that completely subverts everything you want out of a movie. Like, as a movie viewer, you want the character that you're watching to go on some kind of growth pattern, like for there to be some kind of character arc, for her to end up somewhere different at the end than where she starts. And this doesn't give you that at all. And somehow it's still an incredibly watchable film. And I just think there's real power and brilliance in that kind of storytelling. I think Marianne Jean-Baptiste is just absolutely outstanding in this film.
From the gravesite film, part of this, that scene on into the film, it is the trajectory is so interesting. And Mike Leigh, holy crap. Just holy crap. And his relationship with Marianne Jean-Baptiste and Cynthia Austin to get those performance, like they're very, very working in tandem. Especially like, cause it does make the rest of the characters feel outsiders to their own stuff. And I thought that was fascinating, especially to take that turn at that point in the movie, especially with the establishment of her sister's character of what kind of a person she is in contrast.
Well, yeah. And there's something like really deeply kind of feminist about this experience, about that, like, and he doesn't feed you a whole lot of the background, but there's enough to know that she took on way more than her share very early on, and has been such a caregiver for so many people for so long, and this is part of why she is where she is now. And there's something about that I don't know, I think a lot of women can connect to and understand and sympathize with. I just think this is such an interesting insight into this kind of behavior. So yeah, I just thought it was really brilliant.
And not to hammer on this movie a lot more and stuff, but like, it's funny because I mean, I just saw it last night, so that's why it's a little fresh in my mind, but she keeps saying it multiple times, I'm a sick woman. And it's almost like her plight to see, like, who's going to take care of me if I keep saying it out into the world? Is anybody going to take care of me? And nobody does. Nobody picks up on it at all. They take it as a complaint and just like her being shitty, but she's just like putting out there as like a lifeline, but nobody's hooking on it. It's very, very interesting, and actually makes her a little bit more sympathetic, even if her like avenue of trying to do this is completely unsympathetic and hard to like, because this movie is like, I understand what Bill's saying with this movie, it's a hard movie to take. It's a like, the hard truths of this film is how hard it, like how vicious it does come across.
Mike Leigh and Marianne Jean-Baptiste were in the Criterion Closet together.
Oh,
and it's so fun to watch because they have such a long running relationship. It's like two friends talking. It's so fun.
That's so cool. You have certainly try to write in the people you're work, like, especially as Mike Leigh as a writer, he's probably definitely like writing in her voice. He knows her so well. So to create this kind of a character for her is like, holy fuck. Like, and to know that she had the fucking chops to pull it off.
And Michelle Austin is just so like luminous by comparison. Like, she's so lovely in this role.
This is definitely higher on Bill's list.
Yeah, totally. maybe next movie he can get together with David Thewlis and make another movie, because I love Naked. It's so good. Another hard watch, but incredibly satisfying.
I'll always be a sucker for bringing Sally Hawkins into it.
Yeah,
this is like the polar opposite of Happy Go Lucky.
Yeah, for sure. This is a double feature.
Yeah, it is. It would be a great double feature.
Happy Go Lucky, Hard Truths. double feature.
Can you imagine if Pansy met the driver's ed instructor from Cappy Go Lucky?
Oh my God.
Who would out bitch each other?
Holy shit.
I love it. I love it. What if? Bill, you're number four.
My number four is Civil War. Alex Garland, a giant gut punch. But I find it really weird that it's like people didn't actually watch the film. They all brought their own politics towards it and kind of didn't actually get the film. Like, do you guys not get the fact that he's like saying that Texas and California are together? Like, he's just taking the piss. It's hilarious. Yeah, it's, I love the acting. I think Kirsten Dunst is always great, but I think she's especially good in this one. And I think the supporting actor award should be meant for performances like Jesse Plemons, where he just shows up and destroys for 10 straight minutes. And the people will say, oh, he's not on the screen long enough. But, you know, Isabella Rossellini is in Conclave for like less than 10 minutes and they're talking about her. So why can't Jesse Plemons also be talked about? And Alex Garland is quite possibly one of the great filmmakers we have going right now. And it looks like he has another just stupidly tense film coming out this year about it's the Iraqi war. And yeah, it's I wish more people would give this one a chance without just watch it without any kind of prejudice. I think it's a really damn great film.
And Stephen McKinley Henderson is so fucking good in this movie. Yeah.
I don't know if the problem was that people didn't get it or that the film was marketed as political commentary and then people were disappointed by the fact that it wasn't really. Like, it's a great action movie. I agree with you. Like, the tension in this film is off the charts. The performances are fucking fantastic. But in terms of like political commentary, this is not it. You know, no. If that's what you were going and expecting, you're going to be disappointed. So I think the problem was the marketing, not the reception of the audience. I think the audience was kind of led down a garden path that didn't really end up where they thought it was going to go.
Yeah, I fully 110% agree. I think A24 really fumbled. I think that in hindsight, they probably see that. I think on paper, it looks like a great marketing strategy, but I think they misread the room. Especially in the political climate that this came out in and where we are today. I've seen this now like two or three times, for sure two, I think a third time. Garland has never been a filmmaker that tells like a straightforward story. Like, his movies are always about one thing and then he's getting at something else. And I think it's impossible to go into something thinking you know exactly what he's telling you, because you never really know. And this movie, I think you're right, Melissa. I think that nobody that went in thinking they were going in for, if you don't know Garland and you watch that trailer and you think you went in for one thing, you're always going to be disappointed, because that was never what was on the table. And I hope more people find it on Amazon Prime, because watching this, like in like where we are today versus where we were when this came out in like February or March, it plays like with an even more of a gut punch. And technically, this movie is so good. I think it's easy to forget how technically apt this movie is. Like, the visual effects, the sound design, it's all so, like, I saw this in IMAX, and like the amount of precision in the filmmaking is on par with Dune. It's not as flashy, because it's not like big deserts and, you know, giant, like huge sets with, you know, thousands, replicating like thousands of people. Like, it's not, doesn't have that visual flash that you expect from a VFX film, but the amount of visual effects and the way that they're handled, this is exactly how I want to see visual effects. Like, I want to not know that they're there or think about them and then think back on it later and go, holy shit, that was so mind blowing. This movie was higher on my list. I fucking love this movie. I think it's completely underseen, and I fully agree more people need to give it a chance. I think eventually we'll come back on it, kind of like we came back on The Beach, which I also think is really like a fantastic movie that's criminally underseen. But as far as I'm concerned, Garland has not made a bad movie. Sometimes the endings are a bit wishy-washy, but he is always a filmmaker that is like pushing boundaries and giving you things you don't know you want. And I am there for all.
It's also got killer just needle drops. throughout the entire film.
So many good ones. Yeah.
So good. So good. And that final sequence, it plays so good on repeat watches. It's just stupendous. It's just amazing. I love that movie. It's not my number three. My number three is actually Baby Girl, which Melissa had lower on her list. I love this movie for all the reasons that Melissa mentioned before. I really don't have a lot more to add, other than I for whatever reason, like, I've always been really interested in sexuality and the way relationships work and how relationships are not always as straightforward as you might think they are. And this movie just kind of nailed all the little tidbits that I think are really, really interesting. And just to reiterate what you said, Melissa, like, the fact that this is realistic in a way that we're not used to seeing in movies, like, it's the kind of thing that you might see in a documentary about sexuality and relationships. You don't see it's not what you expect to see from a big Hollywood blockbuster with Nicole Kidman. Like, that's not the movie that you expect. And for me, I think that that's what works really well. And Hilary Swank is so interesting. And now that I've seen her three feature films, I can tell you Bodies, Bodies, Bodies is the odd man out, because Instinct is very much in this round, in this ballpark, and working in the same kind of blurring of lines of relationships and sexuality and expectation. And it's always very much rooted in the women. And to me, that's super interesting. And I just love this movie for it. Love it, love it, love it. And, you know, it kind of helps that there's a lot of nice chemistry here as well.
Father figure dance, trending for a reason.
I am so glad that this is a social media thing. Hopefully it'll bring more people to the movie and we can have more conversations about female sexuality. That's all. Steve, you're number three.
My number three of this year is, I guess, my last real genre piece of this top 10, and it is The Substance. This movie is fucking incredible. Coralie Farragut made an operatic level theatrical experience that I wish it was just more than me and some other random dude 18 rows away from me or whatever.
But were you guys side-eyeing each other going, you see what I see?
I was on the edge. The last act, I'm on the Elizabeth Sue stuff, I'm on the edge of my seat with my jaw dropped to the floor, because I mean, operatic, I think, almost undersells it. It's just the insanity of this film. Demi Moore is phenomenal. Margaret Qualley is really, 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 really great. And both, I mean, put their bodies through a lot with these prosthetics and everything too, apparently, that fucked them up for a while. It's just a wild and crazy film. The breakdownness of where you pick up The Substance, the flat monotone and non-caringness of the voice over the phone. There's just so much going on in this film. And I knew when I saw Revenge that this was a very special filmmaker. But for her to come home so big time with this film, such a masterpiece of a film, in my opinion, is so very, very cool. And that chicken bone sequence, just fucking,
there are so many great sequences in that movie.
So good. It's just so good. And the hijacking of spinal fluid, and there's just so much stuff that's so great in this film, and I love it. So it's my number three.
Melissa, your number three.
So my number three is Julio Torres's Problemista.
Nice.
I fucking love this movie. I enjoyed watching every single second of this film. And I think in this here, Torres is sharing some really needed perspective on the contemporary immigrant experience in North America, that precarity of survival when your status is not certain, and how that really opens you up to vulnerability for exploitation by employers, by crappy roommates, by everything. Because if you don't have status, you're really fucked. And I see that all the time with friends of mine who are here on, closed work permits and things like that. And it's just, these are the conversations that we need to be having. And especially right now, because the government in the US and the government we're about to have in Canada are really going to push the demonization of immigrants in this country. And yeah, it's just the people who are vulnerable are not Canadian citizens in this equation. I just want to reiterate that. I also think, like, aside from Marianne Jean-Baptiste, Tilda Swinton gives my second favorite performance for a complete bitch who still manages somehow to be a little bit sympathetic. Yeah, she's fucking unhinged in this movie, and it's so entertaining to watch her. And I don't know how both, like, Julio's character Alejandro and the audience still somehow managed to feel a little bit of sympathy and pity for her, despite her incredibly bad behavior. And it's also kind of fascinating that the Karenism is actually a good lesson for oppressed people, because they need to learn how to stand up for themselves better, and maybe Karening is one avenue for that. So yeah, it was just, I fucking love this movie. I thought it was so great. I thought the message was great. I thought the performances were great. I enjoyed every second of watching it. Visually, it's really stunning. There's some really great pieces in this film. And yeah, I loved it. I want to see more from Julio.
I'm just glad to hear that there's a really great Tilda Swinton thing that came out of 2024, a year that gave us The End. Yeah, The End and The Room Next Door. Although she was
in The End. Like, you cannot like The End, but what she's doing in it is exactly what she's supposed to be doing in it.
That's fair. But she was also, I will also give her that she was the voice of an octopus in The Boys this year.
Oh my God. I didn't realize that that was her.
That's her, yeah. A great death scene, too.
Yep.
An octopus death scene.
Ah, oh, Tilda, I love you and your choices.
She's game for whatever. Like, the fact that she did that What We Do in the Shadows episode 2, where they had all the vampires and stuff, and Robert couldn't make it. Robert couldn't make it.
I just saw that clip the other day. It came up, like,
it's so good.
So funny. I'm like, this is genius. I love it. Bill, you're number three.
My number three is Flo, which I think is one of the best animated films of the decade, if not ever. I just think it's really cool that there's, like, no dialogue in the film. There's more emotion in, like, purrs and meows and barks than there is in all of the Michael Bay Transformers movies.
That doesn't take much, though.
Exactly. I haven't talked to anybody who doesn't like this film. And if you do, there's something kind of wrong with you.
Yeah.
And like, it, like, won over a really hardened VIFF audience, and we were all crying. Like, it's just an incredible watch. And I think the Gint should be on talked on the same level, maybe, as, like, a Miyazaki, because they're all making just really awesome films. And this should win everything, because it's awesome. And I hope it does, because it needs to be raised a little bit. It's definitely not The Wild Robot. It's definitely not Inside Out 2. So it needs a little help. But it's a little film that could, and I think it's freaking awesome. So, Flo.
Hopefully the Golden Globe helps boost
it. Yeah, I think that elevated it quite a bit. I think it raised the water level on it.
This was also one of my favorite movie watching experiences, because I got to watch it with my nephews, and they were very skeptical of a dialogue-less movie at first, but at the end, loved it.
Theatrically, it plays great, though. It plays really great theatrically.
My number two, we already talked about at length, Civil War. See it. It's streaming on Amazon Prime.
Shit, I know what your number one is.
Of course you do. It should be a surprise.
I know what it is now, too. That's Red Rooms. I just figured it out. It's stuck. Red Rooms. It's stuck. It's stuck. I'm so proud of you, Marina. It's stuck. It's stuck through the entire year from an early screening. I'll just go ahead then. My number two is Anora. This film is so wild because it hits on so many different levels. And it is still so very Sean Baker. I've said it multiple times. This is more out of most of his films. I feel like you could put this film on for a mature audience, but it'll play well, especially how screwball it gets. Like, if you're not like hooting, hollering along with this movie at a certain point.
Yeah, the whole sequence where he, when the car is getting towed, Dan lost his shit. He thought it was the funniest thing ever. And it's so fun to watch.
Hysterically funny. And it's every player in the game that's making it so great too. And then, yeah, like Bill said, that the heartbreak of that final scene is so bittersweet to go out on. It's really, really special. And it was a really great experience at VIFF to check it out. So yeah, Nora is my number two film of the year.
Fantastic. Melissa, your number two.
Well, we are in full agreement because my number two film is also a Nora.
Yeah, simpatico.
This is, I can't say this is my favorite Sean Baker movie of all time because I think that might still be The Florida Project. Like, I just can't, that movie just touched me in ways that I can't, I still am not over. But I also, my notes on this, part screwball commentary and part dramatic commentary on the class divide and the fallacy of class mobility and how little regard the rich have for other human beings.
Yeah. The whole oligarchy angle is like.
Yeah. It just really shines a light on how invasive the capitalist propaganda machine is, and that thinking that you can ever change your class identity is it's just never going to be that easy. It's like even someone as street smart as Annie gets taken in, and we get taken in with her because we want to buy into the fucking Pretty Woman Cinderella story. And we want her to end up with this beautiful romance in the end. And Sean Baker reminds us that, no, this is fucking real life. It doesn't happen. And it's just, it's quite genius filmmaking. It's great storytelling. Mickey Madison is brilliant. Yuri Borisov is brilliant. The whole supporting cast in this is brilliant. Like, let's be real. Like, they're so entertaining. They're so great to watch. And they feel like dimensional characters. They don't feel like your classic, like, nameless henchmen in a movie. Like, they all have personality and seemingly a backstory. This was a great watch. It was really fun to see in a giant audience at VIFF.
Before we move from Anora, I just want to mention, I've been watching a lot of YouTube. The Brady Corbett, Sean Baker director's talk is like amazing. It's really, really good, where there's a lot of mutual admiration and a lot of discussion about making movies in Europe.
Yeah.
Where the dollar goes a lot further than it does in the US. And now, Bill, you're number two.
Anybody like an upset?
Hit us with it.
My number two is Dune 2.
Oh, shit.
I think Melissa and I might have the same number one. Upset time. Sequels are never better. And this one is just better. It's more epic in scope. And the first movie was already really epic. But Villeneuve cracked the code. Like, it's Paul's story. Stick with Paul. Paul is number one. And when he did that, and he figured it all out. And I love science fiction. And Dune was always my book. And the sci-fi TV show was very good. It's just very dated now, and it doesn't look very good. And it's still very fun. But this is the definitive version of Dune, and I can't wait for the third one. And I'm incredibly happy that the third one is coming and that Villeneuve is doing it. And I thought for sure this would be my number one film of the year. But it's not. And congratulations to all involved. I don't understand why it's being completely shafted in awards. I think it's a revolutionary film. But hey, who am I to say? But Dune 2, number two. Shocking. I am just as shocked as everybody else. I said at the beginning of the year when we saw it, I wanted something to come and be better than Dune 2. And I didn't think it was going to be possible. But something actually did come. And we will talk about it in a few minutes.
I think the Dune is going to I don't think the word is suffer, but I think it's going to have the same fate as Lord of the Rings, where the third movie is going to sweep everything because they're going to feel like they need to give some
recognition for the
recognition
whole
to the, you know, the 10 years of work that have gone into creating this epic masterpiece. Dune, I had Dune as my top, as my number 10, and then it just got inched out when I like kind of relooked at my list and I'm like, okay, but what made me cry this year? I need to include the movies that made me cry because those are the ones you elicited all the. But I mean, I think you're right, Bill. I mean, for me, Dune was always the better of the science fiction novels when I was growing up. It's the one that I really like connected with as a teenager. So to be able to see that on the screen, kind of like somebody cracked my head open and kind of went in there and poked around and went, this is what it's going to look like. And you're like, oh, that's what I always imagined. That's kind of amazing. It's exactly what Peter Jackson did with Lord of the Rings. So I'm happy to see that it's.
Don't you think, like, Villeneuve gets robbed a lot on this stuff? Because I also thought, like, his Blade Runner was fucking genius.
And then it got hampered with being called a box office bomb and all this shit.
I think he gets, like, he's one of these filmmakers that just gets overlooked. Like, his movies are always amazing. And people are like, he's always going to be there making amazing stuff. Well, we'll think about him later. But I'm like, you have to look at this back catalog, which is so impressive, even before he was making the Hollywood movies. I mean, Enemy is still like a fucking masterpiece on a level that is like mind-boggling. And the fact that people haven't seen this movie, when you talk about his filmography, like nobody remembers anything before, what was the...
Sicario.
Yeah, Sicario. Like Sicario was like the kind of the first time there was like, who's this Canadian dude making movies? Like, well, he might be on par with James Cameron, just saying.
Yeah, no shit.
Better.
Absolutely. Better. Yeah.
For my liking, he's better as well. Like, in general, like, I like the early James Cameron. Like, The Abyss, I think, is genius. Terminator, I think, is genius. Aliens, I think, is genius. And then after that, like, the movies are good, but to me, they're not my favorites. Whereas I can't, like, if you ask me for Denis Villeneuve's, like, my favorite Denis movies, I'm like, literally, I couldn't tell you because there are so many good ones. So many good ones. There's yet to be a fail on his.
The only problem with the Dune movies is that we haven't got a weird independent Denis Villeneuve film in like 10 years.
This is the only downside.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he'll do after Dune 3.
I think so too.
Polytechnique 2. Electric Boogaloo.
I hope not. Like, I hope it's on that level, but I hope it's not that.
I've seen that movie twice. I had to watch it for a podcast and I didn't want to watch it again.
It's hard. Yeah. It's brilliant.
I agree. I don't even know if that's streaming anywhere.
I have it on Blu-ray.
Physical media for the win.
Oh, is it actually out on Blu-ray? I have an old
DVD. I have it.
Yeah, I got a Blu-ray.
I've got it. I think mine is a DVD version. For my number one, at this point, it's not a surprise, I don't think. Challengers. Listen, leave me the Tashi energy. Mm-hmm. All day, every day, for the rest of my life, I will be happy.
And hot, sweaty boys.
And hot, sweaty boys being manipulated by a smart woman. I am A-OK. I am A-OK with that, too. I am A-OK with that, too.
They made you, the trailers made you think that it would be the opposite because they're really trying to push Zendaya and they're like, no, it's actually locker room dick. That's all it is.
Pretty much. Like, I can't, it's been such a good year for strong female women, like female women. Oh God.
Female women. Strong
female characters.
The soju is kicking in now, folks.
Oh, it's long kicked in. but it's been, it's been such a great year for like strong female characters, but there is something about Tashi's energy where is she at no point is she not in control. And I just want to take that vibe into everything. Like, I just, whenever I'm feeling kind of like down this year, like all I've thought is Tashi energy. And it's like legitimately fucking works. Like, just think that you've got it under control. You have all the fucking answers and it will be okay. And it has been. I want to take that energy with me forever. So for that reason alone, this movie is my number one. It's also kind of genius and it looks amazing and the performances are great. And it has a banging soundtrack, all of which have been aforementioned. But yeah, Challengers, chef's kiss. So good.
This was also a hard one for me. Like, in terms of not making it into the top 10, but I was like, I can't, like, it yeah, narrowly didn't make
it's
it.
Okay, in. I got you.
Yeah.
I got
thank you. Thank you. Thank you for making it your number one. Cause I loved it. I went to see this movie with my mom and my stepdad. my mom loved it. My stepdad,
not so much.
Not so much. But yeah.
Dan was very confused. He's like, why do you like this movie? I'm like, Tashi energy. It's all about the girl energy. He's like, okay.
I love the queer subtext. Well,
yeah, it that too.
Mm-hmm. It was very mm-hmm. overt text.
Yes.
Mike and Josh O'Connor.
I love this movie.
I really wanted to shave Mike Feist's head. That hair drove me nuts. I don't know why. But yeah.
It's so floppy. Preppy. It's so preppy cool, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, as my niece likes to say, it's preppy cool. I cannot wait till all the girls are old enough for me to show them all the subversive movies I love. I'm like, girls, we're having a night. Let's talk about lady energy for a minute. It's all happening.
Is the thread that ties challengers and queer together that like that imbalance in a relationship where one person cares more than the other?
Maybe. Like,
is that the one thread that ties the two of them together?
I think it might be.
I think it ties a lot of Luca's stuff together, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. When you think about it, I think it totally is.
Think of Call Me By Your Name even.
Who hurt you, Luca?
Yeah, right. Somebody did. Somebody clearly did.
Bones and All is his best movie.
And it's the one that doesn't have that. Well, except for Mark Rylance, but anyways.
Yeah.
Is that the mic drop?
Yeah.
Feels like mic drop. Done.
Pretty much.
Steve, you're number one.
Number one film of the year. It comes in around Christmas time to totally upset the apple cart that I thought Anora would be the best film I watched in the year. But as it turns out, Jesse Eisenberg making a film would change fucking everything. I was so hooked and invested in him and Kieran Culkin's performances in a real pain. I loved this film. I love Kieran Culkin in this film. He is just so special. This performance is so special. And it's also like a knowing performance because I feel like I know this character as well. Like I have connections to it in my own life. And but also at the same time, it has some really great laughs to it that come out of just the oddest moments, like the oh snap moment when they're first getting to know each other is fucking great. I love it because it's so honest. There's so much honesty in this film, and I loved every second of it. And it's a very special film, and that's why I kind of catapulted it to my favorite film of the year.
Very cool.
Yeah, but it made my honorary mention or honorable mentions. Kieran Culkin is just absolutely brilliant, and I love too that Eisenberg is kind of taking on that how are you supposed to feel about confronting the trauma from previous generations, like how do you take that in, how do you react to it. I thought that was really interesting too, like just the whole scene in the concentration camp. And then even like finding the grandmother's house later on, like that trying to process intergenerational trauma, I think it's one thing that we've recognized that intergenerational trauma exists, but how to cope with it or deal with it or figure it out for yourself, I think is something that not a lot of, like, I haven't seen a lot of stories around that. And that I think made this one really interesting.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think that the fact that it's so awkward and kind of like they're both just trying to figure it out and it doesn't look like anything that anybody else has done and it's kind of weird. And then the neighbor gets mad at them for leaving the rock. Like,
yeah,
that moment is just so, like, there's an authenticity to that. Like, you don't dream that up. Like, that clearly happened to somebody that somebody talked to, because you don't just like dream that up out of nowhere. Like, it feels so, and if they did, holy shit, because it just feels like such a real moment. Yeah, it's beautiful. I really like that. It's also in my honorable mentions list. It's so good. For a moment, I'm like, is he going to say Nosferatu? Did I miss something? Melissa, what's your number one?
Okay, well, my number one, which may also be Bill's number one, is Nickel Boys. And it's just for me, like when I was, you know, like at the beginning of the show, when I was outlining like what I was trying to consider in terms of what goes into making the best movie of the year, message, technical excellence, performances, wanting to raise the profile of something so people see it, how watchable this film was, like in all of those categories, for me, this film just scores off the charts. I just think, you know, this the use of first person point of view for this film, like you said, is not a gimmick. It's very integral to the actual mechanism of telling this story. And I think it kind of goes beyond just creating like an empathetic touch point for the audience. I think it's also really vital to the actual, like one of the plot lines is really, it's really key to the plot line. And I, so to me, that's just, it's technical brilliance that's on just another level. Cause I just feel like you're thinking about layers on layers on layers of storytelling. And yeah, that's, it's just so impressive. That's just so impressive. I think the performances in this movie are incredible. Ethan Harise, Brandon Wilson, Anjanou Ellis-Taylor, Hamish Linklater, Fred Hechinger, David Diggs, like everybody is on their A game in this movie. And they really do feel like real people. I also just think, like, I also really applaud a film that approaches some really traumatic subject matter without showing any violence on screen. Like, you do not see any of that. They don't make that spectacle. They don't make violence spectacle in this film. And I think that's really, really important considering the subject matter here. And I think, like, just in terms of the message, like, it's so vital right now for us to recognize and be honest about the very racist history of North America. And we need to have truth before we can have any form of reconciliation or reckoning with the past. And, you know, we're going to spend the next 4 years with a lot of denial of this history. So again, I think like a movie like this is really important. I also think it's important for folks who have, you know, experience of or intergenerational experience of Jim Crow or residential schools to be aware that this movie touches on that kind of racist history and oppression and violence. And so while this is a super important movie for a lot of people to see, I think it's important to kind of know what you're getting yourself into when you go to it. But I just really want as many people as possible to see this movie. I just think it is so brilliant on so many levels, from message just to the artistry of the film. I think it's just beautiful and definitely my favorite movie of the year.
Bill?
So my number one is Hot Frosty.
I knew it. Dustin Milligan for the win.
Not Gladiator 2?
The incredible Netflix classic that will just... No.
It's not even the best of the Christmas Netflix movies. Like, dude, seriously?
The Merry Gentleman, right?
That's way better.
There we go.
So yeah, my number one is Nickel Boys. You know, I always say that this on the podcast, I always say, show me something I've never seen before. And I've seen this before. Like Gaspar Noé did it, and Enter the Void. A couple other people have done it, but nothing has ever been like this before. It's just the craft, the power of the story behind it. It made my cold black heart so excited about what was going to happen next. And I just, it's just the way it's shot, man. Like I never know what's going to happen. And the acting is so first class. And I feel like I'm watching the birth of an American classic. Like this is going to be like Godfather-ish in a few years in my books. I honestly, no hyperbole. I think it's the best film of the decade. I keep on thinking about it. I just can't stop thinking about it. I think it's just an absolute triumph. And I just wish they'd open the damn film.
It came out last week, I think, in a full release, but
this should have been out in December. Like people should have been able to see it. And, like Oscar nominations are on Thursday and a lot of people I know haven't even seen it. So it's pretty annoying, but, yeah, when it comes around, definitely see it. Oh, you're in for a treat.
This was such like, for me, this was such a like a blind watch. It came packaged with like a bunch of other movies in a FYC bundle. And I literally watched it because it was the only thing. I can't even remember what one of the other movies in that bundle was, the boxing movie. And I can't remember what the third one was, but it's the only, it's the second, it was the second one I watched. And I thought
the boxing movie was The Fire Inside. And the other one was Unstoppable.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And they were both terrible.
They were.
And this one was, but I like, this one was the one that nobody was talking about. And it's so good. It was, for me, it was certainly the biggest surprise of the year. This little unassuming movie that just kind of came out of nowhere. And you watch it and you're like, what a gut punch of a film.
Yeah. And I think Anjanou is a dark horse for supporting actress. So
I hope so.
I wish she wasn't such a dark horse.
I know.
For supporting actress, because she's really, she's such a heart in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, honorable mentions, just rattle them off. I'll go first. So I think I mentioned this just out of inching out of my top 10 was Dune Part 2 and then Alien Romulus, because I fucking love that movie. Despite the fact that floating acid scene is ridiculous.
I fucking love the floating acid
it's
scene.
So
but
fun.
I loved it. I loved it so much.
Fun.
I know it's so ridiculous, but it kind of works. That movie is so good. It's so much better than it has any right to be. My number 13 is Immaculate, because of course it fucking is.
The last scene.
I still fucking love that movie on another level. It's so good. Number 14, The Order, because if you're going to do like a police procedural, this is the way to do it. Like, very few people do them as good as Justin Krasinski. And he just does like action movies in such a unique way. I love his filmmaking, and this I think is brilliant. Black Box Diaries. Such an important film about, you know, fighting for the right, your rights and the rights of women just in general. And the fact that Shiori Ito fought for so long to get some recognition for what she went through is just like so inspiring. And I wish it wasn't that hard, but I'm so glad that she did and that she put it out there and shared her pain with the world in order to shine a spotlight on it. I think it's so important. My number 16 was A Real Pain. You guys already talked about it. It's fantastic. My number 17 is probably my biggest surprise of the year, which is Better Man. This movie really came out of nowhere. I'd kind of heard about it, didn't really know what to expect. And it turned out to be like a real shocker of a like super solid, hugely entertaining biopic. Number 18, I Am Celine Dion, because I still think about some of the scenes in that movie. And I like, it's a documentary about Celine Dion. I mean, I don't know what to say about it. It just, I love some of the foresight that she has and the fact that she opened herself up and allowed herself to be captured in these really like painful and intimate moments, I think speak really highly for her. And the fact that she really does come across, and perhaps this is like a falsehood, like, I don't know. But she really does come across as somebody who cares a lot for what she does. And she is an entertainer through and through and through. And the fact that she feels so strongly about it, I have real like admiration for that. 19 is Ghostlight, because it's genius and brilliant and everybody needs to see it. And 20 is The Substance. Who wants to go next? Steve, what are your honorable mentions?
Okay. Flo and Wild Robot. I mean, for reasons that you guys have already, that has been brought up already. Queer. Nosferatu, just because I love Eggers and Eggers' take on this story and just his atmospheric nature. And Willem Dafoe, just projecting to the rafters. I just fucking love him. Pablo Larraín's Maria. Just an incredible performance from Angelina Jolie, and probably one of my favorite looking films of the year. The Brutalist, which just a hearkening to epic filmmaking from Brady Corbet, I think is a very important film in 2024. Dune Part 2, just epic Villeneuve shit with Frank Herbert, just like stuff that we know so well. Love Lies Bleeding, rose glasses, neon noir film that's just goes so hard in the end. Come on, you gotta love that. Heretic, probably another one of my favorite scripts of the year. The Monopoly shit is just so great. So great.
The writing in that movie is like top notch. It's just such a talky movie. It's genius. It's
so good. As you said, it doesn't shut up as soon as it starts. And I love that about it. And Chloe East's switch up in the third act, I think, is so great. Late Night with the Devil, the little film that could. Oh, my God, this film's so great. And infinitely, infinitely, infinitely rewatchable. And I love I love movies like that. Andrea Arnold's Bird. This movie goes hard in the third act, and I really appreciate it for it. And some really great performances in this movie, and I love the way Andrea Arnold shoots a film. And I just want to give a little mention, especially because this movie's taking a hell of a shit kicking, and I think it's sad and ignorant in a lot of ways. Better Man is one of the best films of 2024. So much fun in theaters, and it doesn't deserve the lambasting it's getting right now. It won't make its money in North America, but like at the same time, I don't think you fucking need to know who Robbie Williams is anyway. Just watch the fucking movie. It'll tell you who he is.
110% agree. Melissa, your honorable mentions.
Oh, okay. These are probably not in any discernible order. Dune 2 was up there. Challengers was up there. But I got to shout out two of my most enjoyable theater experiences this year. And that was Strange Darling and Love Lies Bleeding. Both of those movies were just a fucking great time in the theater. It was so fun watching both of those with an audience. Strange Darling, like I said, completely shocked the hell out of me the whole time. And that was great. Then Love Lies Bleeding was just so fun. That the last sequence is just so unhinged, so over the top, so great. Rose, please make more movies that are this insane. It was so much fun. A Real Pain, Challengers. And then there's a couple movies, Flo and Bird, which we already kind of discussed. And then a couple movies I wanted to also sort of champion. Singing Back the Buffalo, documentary by Tasha Hubbard. Tasha Hubbard is a brilliant Indigenous filmmaker from Saskatchewan. See all of her movies, like just see all of them. But Singing Back the Buffalo was kind of special because it was one of her only films that's actually gotten like an American release. So that was rad. So this one should be easier to find and you should watch it. She's just a brilliant filmmaker. I also really loved Kazik Radwinski's Matt and Mara. Again, similar to Baby Girl, because I don't think we get a lot of like realistic relationship movies on screen. And I love the chemistry between Derek Campbell and Matt Johnson. I just think the two of them on screen are fire. And this is such a like quiet, slow relationship movie, but I really, really dug it. Also Maddie Diop's Dahomey. It's kind of a weird documentary. It's sort of weird. There's like a little bit of magical realism thrown into a documentary. But the final debate between the students about the repatriation of objects from France is really, really smart. And is a conversation we need to be having about decolonization. It's a great film on Mubi, easy to find.
Can I add something about Tasha Hubbard? If you're in Canada, it looks like all of our films are available on the NFB website.
Nice.
Free of charge. So go Canada. Bill, your honorable mentions.
All right. So number 11, Hail Satan for Long Legs and Hail Satan for Osgood Perkins. Number 12, The Brutalist, which would be a top five movie if I didn't have problems with the third act. Really good movie. I just had problems with the third act. And number 13, Better Man. What all you guys have said, it deserves a lot better than it's getting. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Number 14, Saturday Night. Jason Reitman's best film in 15 years, probably. And it's pretty damn good. Check it out. Number 15, Hail Satan, Late Night with the Devil. A nearly awesome little horror film featuring one of the coolest teenage girl performances I've seen in a very long time. She is creepy as all hell. Number 16, I love magical realism. Andrea Arnold's Bird. sorry, Marina. Number 17, Nosferatu. Not quite as good as I was hoping it would be, but still really damn good. Number 18, Conclave. Very slick entertainment. Number 19, Memoir of a Snail. One of my favorite animated films of the year, but just not quite as good as Flow, obviously. And I always like to have a weird movie I like to champion as my number 20, and that is Sasquatch Sunset.
Yeah.
Because it
was
is
that
awesome.
From this year?
It is. Oh, it is. God, yeah. So March, good. I think. March or April is when it came out. Yeah.
Such an incredible heart to it. And people did not expect it. And it really resonated with me.
Eisenberg had a year.
Yeah, it's Dan approved. Dan approved, guys.
And
saying a lot.
And just because I'm Bill, here's a couple other films. All We Imagine Is Light, The Girl with the Needle, I Saw the TV Glow, Hitman, Inside Out 2, Twisters, Sing Sing, Rebel Ridge, Smile 2, The Wild Robot, Woman of the Hour, Remarkable Life of Evelyn, and A Real Pain. Those are the rest of my shortlists. Oh, and Maria. I forgot about that one, too. There you go. Yeah. Because I make stupid lists.
I can't believe you put Inside Out 2 in your top 30.
34.
Was it within the 30?
Yeah.
Well, I'm still shocked it's there, to be totally honest.
I like that movie. Come on. I had I had Twisters in there. You didn't say anything.
Because Twisters is awesome. I legitimately almost put it in my top 20.
Yeah, Chloe actually really liked it. And she realized while watching it that she hadn't seen the first one. And she really liked Twisters. So
I saw Twister after I watched Twisters. Actually, no, it was before. It was in preparation because I'd never actually seen that movie. For whatever it was, like in this blind spot era of my film watching, and I finally got to see it, and I thought it was fine.
To be fair, and I got to be full disclosure, and I don't know if it makes it onto the video feed part. It might. I said, "Yeah, Glenn Powell's in it." She's like, "I like Glenn Powell," so that's probably
who doesn't like Glenn Powell.
I was like, "Oh, okay, that's the winner right there."
All the way, baby. All the way. Glenn Powell for all the things. I think he's also like a legitimately good actor, but
yeah,
that too. I will take Glenn Powell in pretty much anything at this point.
Exactly.
I should also say, like, so the reason that The Brutalist did not make my list or my short list is that my partner actually made me promise that it wouldn't be on my list. Watching that, he hated that I made him watch that movie so much.
He's like, you can never talk about it again.
You can't bring that one up on the show. It can't be in your top 10. I was like, okay, all right.
Wow.
Visceral reaction.
Yeah. Dan came and inspected my list and he's like, okay. I'm not quite sure what that meant. Like, okay. We've been together this long at this point. I'm just like, whatever.
Well, and I will say, like, it's not that my partner dictates what I'm going to put on my top 10. Just to be clear, like, I'm the one in charge. But but in terms of, I appreciated all of the technical aspects of that film, but the enjoyment of watching it was not super high for me. So I think that was it.
I mean, and I really like Brady Corbett. I've liked the movies that he's made before, and I think he's a really interesting filmmaker. This was just not the movie for me. I'm with you, Melissa. I can appreciate, like, technically it's really great, and I think thematically the story that he's telling is really interesting. But it just, like, I just thought it was a bit too long for the material that he had. I did think it was really interesting. And that conversation with Sean Baker, they were talking about like the running times of movies. And I hadn't actually like sat and considered this before, even though it makes perfect sense. And I'm surprised that nobody's talked about it before, but we binge watch a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Like, I binge watched like 4 hours of Silo the other day without taking a bathroom break. Like, I didn't ever feel the need to get up and do anything. So when people say, you know, there is the attention span is shrinking and people don't have it within them to sit for 3 hours, I call fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Brady Corbett called fucking bullshit to begin with, because he's like, you binge watch shit all the time. And it's so true.
Yeah.
You binge watch, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours of TV, no problem. So don't come at us saying, you know, nobody has the attention span to watch a 3.5 hour movie. I think if the movie is good enough, we'll watch it. Like Dune is really long too, and we watched it.
And to be fair, it's not exactly a Nuri Bilge Ceylan film, for Christ's sakes. Like
no, exactly. So for me, it didn't really work for me as a whole. It's not a movie that I enjoyed watching in any way. Like I thought it was fascinating and interesting, but honestly, I'd rather watch Childhood of a Leader again. And I didn't love that movie either.
I just thought this one was really bleak. Like for me, the counterpoint is Secret Mall Apartment. Like I want to think about art as being having some joy in the act of creation and not have all of, like, I understand that there is art that is rooted in survival and pain. But I also would hope that art helps transcend that. And I didn't, that's not what I took away from this film at all. I found it really, really, really bleak. Again, that's not a knock on the film. It's just the reception wasn't great. So obviously it's going to be on many top 10 lists this year and people should watch it and make up their own minds.
I agree. Do you guys want to pick a film for next episode or
what's coming?
January 24th, The Brutalist opens wide.
Let's not talk about that anymore, please.
Seed in 70 millimeter. The Colors Within, the new G-Kids big animated film.
See it. That's all I gotta say.
It's opening here. I'm seeing it on Thursday. I got vibes on this one. Flight Risk. the new Mel movie. Come on.
Not happening. Sorry. He and Mark Wahlberg can, you know, go do whatever to each other.
Yeah.
I'm not going there.
It's got a weird hair thing going on in that trailer. I don't quite know what's going on there.
I should have known something was wrong with that trailer when I watched it and they never once mentioned the director. And I didn't find out until later that it was Mugus. I'm like, oh, that is
from the director of Hacksaw Ridge, Apocalypto, and Braveheart. Like,
did those movies?
Yeah, no shit, right?
Fuck.
Do you guys know there's a Passion of the Christ sequel in 2 months, right?
No, he hasn't already made it that quickly, has he?
I think he has. I think it's coming out in like April.
I don't need to see that shit. Once is bad enough. Apocalypto is still the best of his movies.
Yeah,
and I won't even watch that again.
It's very good.
Oh, I don't know. Braveheart's really good. Fuck me.
The second half of Hacksaw Ridge is really great.
Presence opens. We've all seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it.
I haven't seen it. But
yeah, I liked it.
Okay, no. You guys liked it. I didn't.
Bill is wrong.
January 31st has a movie I'm really interested in called Companion.
I don't know if I'm getting it, but I'm super excited for it. Sophie Thatcher is a star. I brought up Heretic, but she's fucking a star.
That looks fun. That would be my pick.
And Jack Quaid.
Jack Quaid is great.
Jack Quaid is fun.
Yeah.
The animated film Dog Man.
My nephews are going to be so excited.
I'm excited. I think those books are genius. They're so much fun. And my nieces are all older now. They're like beyond the Dogman years. But Chloe is so excited to see it. I'm like, I am so taking you, kid. We are having an anti-kid date. It's going to be awesome. It just looks so fun. I think it looks so fun. I don't know how much we'd have to say about it.
You can bring that to the table next time. And the final film is a little indie film with Kristen Stewart and Steven Yeun called Love Me.
Oh, yeah. I really want to see that.
I don't think I'm going to be getting that one.
You said Case 2. I'm there.
Yeah.
I just want to I'll bring up that Hard Truths has its limited opening on the 24th. Universal Language has a staggered opening over the next 3 weeks, including Vancouver date on Friday the 31st. And also the Walter Salles film I'm Still Here opens in limited on the 31st.
Nice. I'll finally get to see Universal Language.
Yeah, I have the screener for it. Do you want to do Universal Language and do a Canadian film?
Yes.
I'd be okay with that.
Let's do it because I know Bill liked it a lot. Bill liked it a
lot. I just think it's nuts. Like, you guys,
and we haven't really talked about it.
Yeah.
Besides the VIF wrap up when Bill talked about it, we never really talked about it. So let's do that.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Okay.
And this gives Bill a chance to lean into his King of Canadian Cinema persona.
Well, I mean, because 2024 was the year where Bill first kind of really donned the crown.
Yeah.
So he's fucking earn it in 2025. Like, there's none of this skirting around bullshit, Bill. You actually have to, like, earn this crown or defend the crown, at least.
In the critics group, I mean, we had to vote for the best BC film, and all the films I voted for didn't even make the final cut. So people just are not on my wavelength. I am the king, and they just don't get it.
Yeah, I doubt that anybody in the VFCC is going to be on mine too, but we'll see. I've floated some stuff.
What's your best BC film, Bill?
I said the Can I Get a Witness?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I can go with that. What else is there?
Fleming for the win.
I voted for the Chef and the Daruma.
Yeah, me too.
Decent film. Yeah. I forget, this was two months ago. But
Tojo is a force. I love him.
It's another BC film called Anidia I voted for. I forget the rest.
Things to look forward to.
Yeah.
So that was our countdown. We will be back to regular programming on the next episode. Until then, you can find links to all the things we talked about in this week's show at atcpod.ca. And where can folks find you between now and then? I guess I can start. You can find me on Blue Sky and Instagram and Letterboxd as The Marina.
And I am Bill Harris. I am on Blue Sky at That Bill Harris, on Letterboxd at SoundJam69. I'm thinking maybe this year I might actually try to do Letterboxd properly, but then I looked at my list and I've already screwed up. So, oops. Sorry.
It's only January the 19th. You can still fix this.
I don't know. I don't actually care. So it's good.
We do. Because you stalk us and judge us. We want to be able to stalk you and judge you too, Bill.
110%.
I don't give people ammo. Sorry.
Nope.
You can find me on Letterboxd at Melzy. And that's really about the only place.
And Steve, last but not least.
You can find me at The Steeple Dead on Letterboxd, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. There I do a show with my daughter called What the Hell Should I Watch? It's weekly, every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. I'm also on Tremble the Horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. Our last two episodes are on Hellraiser 4 Bloodline and the 2021 Hellraiser from David Bruckner. And I'm also on Shane Hewitt and the Night Shift every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Toronto's News Talk 1010, which can be found on the iHeartRadio network. And that's about it.
Until next time.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.
Bye.